Just two lectures left. Good morning, everybody. Just two lectures left. For me, it's a very special situation. It's the last week of my life where I'm required to teach, or for the next 6 years. So let's enjoy the upcoming two lectures. Currently, we talk about diagnostic medical image processing. To be honest, this is the most exciting topic at the whole university, as you know. And we talked about many aspects. We talked about pre-processing of single images. Then we combined the images and tried to compute higher dimensional information out of these images. We called it reconstruction. And then currently, we talk about registration fusion. How can I merge images of different modalities, images that have been acquired at different time points? How can I combine them and bring them into a joint and common coordinate system? And we call this registration. And there are many different types of registration. Currently, we are considering the most obvious situation, or let's say the simplest configuration of registration problems, where we say we have rigid motion or a rigid transformation. That means the objects are just rotated and translated without deforming things. Yeah, think about the bended pointer, the broken pointer. And we use point correspondences. Point correspondences. Basically, we have points, and we have points in 2D, 3D, 3D, or 2D, and here also 3D or 2D. And we want to compute the transform of this point set to this point set. And what we have learned now is, and let me describe this here. So point-based rigid registration. We have seen three different types, okay? Two we have discussed in detail in the context of registration. One we have already learned. We just reconsidered the algorithm from one of the previous lectures. So if we have 2D point-based registration, we come up with a linear solver for this problem using complex numbers. So we have a linear solver of the problem using complex numbers. That's the easiest way to come up with a linear solution. There are many others, but this is the easiest one. So we transform our points into complex numbers, where the x coordinate is the real part, the y component is the imaginary part, and then we make use of our knowledge that we know by heart and forever. We knew that multiplication of complex numbers is nothing else but rotation and scaling. Yeah? If I multiply one point interpreted as a complex number with a rotation complex number, then I get the rotation in the 2D plane. No? And whether I think about real and imaginary part or XY component, that doesn't matter at the end of the day. So we come up with a complex number-based linear solver. Then we have considered the 3D image registration problem, and we have seen that we can transfer the idea of complex numbers from 2D 2D to 3D 3D by using quaternions. And again, we find that we end up with a linear solver where we say the quaternion Q prime is nothing else but the rotation quaternion multiplied with the point multiplied with the conjugate complex. Yeah? That was the idea. So we have this quadratic form where we multiply from left with a rotation quaternion and from right with its inverse. And we, last time on Thursday, we have seen that we end up again with a linear solver. So we can estimate the rotation of point sets given to point sets, knowing that these are linked by a rotation, 3D rotation. We can compute the rotation using the quaternion setup. And then we looked at the situation 3D, 2D registration, where we said the point in homogeneous coordinates can be transformed by a projection matrix P, and we end up with this point in again in homogeneous coordinates for all the points from 1 to n. And we can write this just to repeat it in terms of the row vectors of P. So that's the first row of P, the second row of P, the third row of P. We write it in terms of row vectors. We multiply this with Pi. And what we see then is we get P1 transpose Pi tilde. Should write it this way. P2 T Pi tilde P3 transpose Pi tilde. And so I get here the inner product. I get the components of this vector, and then I can divide by the third component to get the first component of Q, divide by the third component, the second one, to get the second component, and then we multiply by the denominator and end up again with a linear solver. See the chapter on camera calibration, where we discuss the homogeneous coordinates and the projection models. There we did this in detail. So if we have 2D, 2D, 3D, 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 2D registration using point correspondences, we know it's rather simple from an algebraic point of view to do the computations. Numerical algebraic point of view. We get linear solvers, so SVD is the tool to be used to do that. Okay? You look at me like you're not so happy. You're happy. Stefan? Totally happy. Okay? Good. Good. Then over the years, again, I was not so happy with this scheme because here we have one major drawback. Here the problem is that translations are not considered. Yeah, we can only estimate rotations. And I was telling you that we have to compute the translation in advance. And if we have point correspondences, we can compute the center of gravity, the mean vector of all the points, and compute out of the difference vector, or by computing the difference of the mean vectors, we can compute the translation vector. And then we move our coordinate systems to the center of gravity, and then we do the rotation estimation. 10 years ago, I was not happy with this kind of asymmetry, because if I do something wrong in computing the translation vector, this is inherited to the rotation estimate. And I always wanted to have a solution where rotation and translation is considered in one framework such that the errors are not accumulating. If I do something wrong in a subset of parameter estimates, this should not be this should not affect the other parameters I have to estimate. So I was looking for a solution to do this in one joint setup. And looking for a solution in research means either somebody else did it before you started to think about that, you use then this solution, or you come up with your own one. And actually, at the end of the 90s, a colleague of mine was struggling with the same type of problem, and he came up with a concept of dual quaternions. You run it into the next dimension of abstraction. Actually, dual numbers are very special numbers used in mathematics, and then you can incorporate, if you use dual quaternions, rotation and translation. And I was teaching that for years to my students, explaining this is a dual number with a plus epsilon b and so on. And then we derived the algorithm for the estimation. And I was always very happy with that. And I will do it right now as well, a little bit at least. But I tell you, when we were facing the problem from a practical point of view, so we have a spin-off, and we started to provide this algorithm for industry. And at some point, one of my former students said, we did the dual quaternions. I implement the dual quaternions and try to solve the practical problem using dual quaternions. And the end of the story is, it's a brilliant theoretical concept, but in practice, you should not go for it. In practice, compute the mean vector, use the quaternions to estimate the rotation. It's totally sufficient and better than the symmetric approach that looks very smart and nice and quite attractive from a theoretical point of view, but for practice, dual quaternions are not a good way to start. And if my friend and colleague who invented this is watching the video, he might be very disappointed. But I tell you, it's fine to go this track with a very pragmatic idea of using the center of gravity for eliminating the rotation. Okay. So where is it? We even took it out. So let me just end the year with a comment. Incorporation of translation we use the dual quaternions. That are practically not relevant at all. In robotics, people use it, but in computer vision image processing, they don't. And dual numbers are very nice because dual numbers are a plus epsilon b, where epsilon square is zero. That's very interesting. And then a and b are quaternions, and then you can do all these crazy things. Good. Now, the problem is, why isn't my picture showing up here? Let me just check. Perfect. So, where where can we work with point correspondences? For instance, here, what type of image is it? Can you guess what modality we have used there? It's a Torax CT. It's a Torax CT, and here we have the gas tubes, Bronchialbaum, the bronchial tree, in the lung, and here you see. I'm sorry for that. What is happening here? So we do a segmentation. We do a segmentation of the tree, and at the bifurcation, that's where the tubes split up, you have points. Yeah, and these can be detected automatically. So if we do a point-based registration, we always look for anatomical landmarks. That's how we call these points that can be found in the various images. We look for features that can be associated with a 3D point in the object. And if we show vessel structures or here the lung tubes, we try to find automatically the points where the structures split up. And there we put our point feature that can be detected in each of the images. So if I have two lung images, I can segment out the tube structures and compute the points of bifurcation here. And then I can use these point correspondences for estimating the transform between the data sets. The same holds for vessels. You also have the bifurcations, and you can find them in the 3D structures and the 2D structures. And here's an example for 2D, 3D image fusion. Why do we need that? For instance, if you have a 3D reconstructed vessel system of the cerebral vessels, and you do an X-ray while the patient sits on the table and gets treated, you want to know how the 3D structure is mapped to the X-ray image that you observe right now on the table. And then we compute the rotation, translation, and projection such that the 3D structure can be overlaid with the observed 2D structure. And why is that clinically relevant? I mean, how do we visualize vessels using X-ray? There is one crucial disadvantage. Usually, you don't see vessels in an X-ray image because the blood and the vessel structures, they are not radio opaque. That means the X-ray particles are not attenuated on a level that you can see their shadow in the X-ray projection. So what do doctors, radiologists do? They inject contrast agent into the blood. Usually some contrast agent. And if you inject contrast agent such that the blood is mixed with the contrast agent, such that the X-ray particles get attenuated by the blood contrast agent mixture, then you put additional material into the blood, and the kidneys have to filter out the contrast agent of your blood or of the patient's blood. So the kidneys tell the doctor, I can deal with contrast agent, but only with a limited amount of contrast agent. Okay? So the kidneys cooperate, but only to a certain level. And that means if you want to fix, for instance, the vessels by an interventional procedure of a stroke patient, then you cannot always inject contrast agent like crazy, because at some point the kidneys will fail. Yeah, they will no longer tolerate the application of contrast agent. So we are limited. And if the doctor navigates with the catheter through the vessels, he always wants to see where I am and so on. So how can we visualize the vessel tree without applying contrast agent all the time? There are different approaches. One is the so-called road mapping approach. So what do they do with road mapping? Just for you that you have heard that. What do? The patient sits on the table. So this is the table. And here is the patient. Yeah. And let's assume that we deal with a stroke patient, OK? So we want to look into the brain. So the first thing the doctor does is, and I'm explaining things very simplified. So he says, the best thing is the patient isn't moving. And for these stroke procedures, usually the patients are awake. So they are not sleeping. They are not sedated. Yeah, there is no anesthesia. Good. There is no anesthesia. They are not sedated. They are awake. So they tend to move. So what does the radiologist, the practitioner do? He goes to OB and gets a tape and tapes the head. Yeah? So we take a tape here and tape the head to the table. Yeah? We tape it. And you go there. If you can read the newspaper, if the tapes are a special offer of OB, you can be sure you will find all the radiologists down there buying tapes. I'm kidding. It's, of course, a very special tape and blah, blah, blah. But it looks very OB-like if you see that. And I have to be careful what I'm saying, because maybe you have heard about that on Friday or Saturday. One of my colleagues of our university made it into the Bild-Zeitung. Yeah? He was taped. Not with a tape, but with a tape. And there was this tremendous video where he was shouting at students. It's a high-risk procedure that we are undergoing here. So it tapes it. And then you know, the catheter here, the catheter goes into the brain. And then contrast agent is applied. And they inject contrast agent and capture an image. Okay, and then the patient is not moving. They freeze the image with the contrast agent-filled vessel trees. And then they can capture additional images where they don't see the vessels, but only the catheter. And then they take the pre-acquired vessel tree image and overlay it with the current fluoroscopic image where they don't see the vessels. And that gives a good intuition. And that's called the road mapping image that is captured once and then overlaid with the current X-ray image during the procedure. And doctors also want to do 3D road mapping. So what they do is they capture a 3D data set, they register it to the roadmap image, and then they overlay the 3D image with the current fluoro image. And if then they move the X-ray system to another position, they can link to the audiometry of the system the 3D data set, and it starts to rotate with them. So they don't have to apply additional contrast agent for different viewing directions. That's the idea. Yeah? That's why here 2D, 3D image registration is required. Okay, so that's a nice application as well. Here is another nice example where image registration is required for digital subtraction angiography. You have an image without contrast agent, you have an image with contrast agent, and you compute the difference image. Okay? And it's important, if the patient moves in between, then the difference image will not look at as nice as this one. So you have to register the images and compensate for the motion. That's where image registration is used for motion compensation. Just for you, is this a very modern X-ray system or a very old X-ray system that was used? If you look at the images. Right, because you have here, you know, this circle that's clear, that's the bucket structure of the image intensifier. So if you see images like that, you know it's an old system. Okay? And our marketing people of Erlangen, they have recently done a nice brochure saying we are at the frontier of imaging research and blah, blah, blah. And at the front page, they have shown images like that. And if you don't know these little details, yeah, then brochures like that look very funny. Yeah, look very funny because that's technology that was used 15 years ago at the frontier of research. Yeah, so very funny. Here you see a modern system. Yeah, you see the. They are filled. There is not there is a circle structure here. It's also an old one. Or here you see subtraction angiography where the patient has moved and you want to compute the motion of the patient to get the motion compensated. Good. So we all agree we can deal with point correspondences and compute the transformation if it's a rigid motion. Okay. We can do that. Now, research is driven by questions. Yeah, a good lecture with a cool storyline is also driven by questions. So what is the next question we are considering now? The next question we are considering is a so-called key question. And that is now something that was very much studied in the middle of the 90s and is still an ongoing research question in our field. How can you register images using intensities only? So we don't have point correspondences, but we just have the intensities. We call this intensity-based image registration. So this is called intensity-based image registration. This is intensity-based image registration. So the situation is as follows. We have a source image. We have a target image. And we map these two images on each other by a transform. And we want to use the intensity images. Here, let's say we look at the 2D image at point x, y. We have the intensity value s x, y. And here, for the target image, we have the intensity value t x, y. And if both images, first case, we look at images acquired by the same modality. So think about the situation. This is an X-ray image, and this is an X-ray image. Yeah? So I X-ray image this here, and I X-ray image this here, and I want to have a similarity measure of the two images. I want to know whether they are registered, and I want to have a measure, a function that takes the two images and gives me a number, and the number is a hint whether they are well registered or not. That's the idea. Yeah? So, and the most simplest I should use the notation I have here. So the reference image is called F, and the image to be registered is G. Sorry for that. Yeah. And if we are in a discrete, the indices are I and J, that's the image row and column, and G, I, J, the image row and column. So again, your criticism, my notation is horrible, is valid. Yeah, I have to work on that. And then T is the transform. T is the transform. Yeah? And in this case I have to rotate the image F a little bit, and then it should fit to the image G. Okay? And what I can compute is the mean intent. what I can compute is the mean intensity value in image F and the mean intensity value in image G. What is the mean intensity value? Right, we just sum them up and divide by the number of pixels, okay? So we have a mean intensity value. And if I have now images of two images of a single modality, that's the simplest case, and they perfect match. So what I do is I take you, Roman, right? I capture an image, boom, and I capture again an image, boom, yeah? And you haven't moved in between. And I take an image of you, Yishin, boom, and another one, boom, and then I compute the similarity of the two images I have captured. Nothing has moved, so I just take the difference pixel-wise, okay? I take pixel-wise the difference, and if nothing has changed in between the two images, the sum over the differences, or the sum over the squared differences to avoid mutual cancellation of plus one and minus one, that should be very small. And that's the first similarity measure. SSD is called sum of squared differences. It's called SSD. Yeah. And as it is with nice abbreviations, then you can go to a conference and do smart conversations like, yeah, we have used an SSD-based rigid registration approach. Yeah? And then it sounds like very complicated and very deep, but SSD is nothing else but we sum over all the pixels and we compute F of ij minus G of ij square, and that's the SSD of f and g. That's the sum of square differences. So, Max, if you use your mid-range smartphone that you own, right? It's or your excellent smartphone or whatever. I should not always use some weighting schemes in my sayings. So you use your smartphone and you make an image of your neighbor. What's your name?
Alex.
Alex. Okay, and she's not moving, you're not moving, and you capture two images. What type of difference image will you observe? You will, of course, not have a zero image, but you will observe the noise of your CCD sensor, right? So, no, but it should be in the range of a very small number if you sum the differences up. And you can do that also by X-ray images. No? So if they are well registered, this should have a very small value. Now, if you move a little bit around Alex and capture another image and you compute the difference will be higher because the images show different structures, okay? So we can say if images are mismatched or show different things, SSD values go up. Good. And if I want to do a registration, I can do the following. How can I? Let me check. What can I do? So what I can do, now is I can say I estimate my, and estimates are always characterized by an hat. I estimate my transformation T such that I have a minimization of ij Fij minus g, and now I transform the index ij to a pair I prime j prime, and this difference has to be minimized. So I move around the indices, yeah, the indices of the second image, and I try to find a transformation such that the overall sum of square differences is as small as possible. Yeah. And if it's a rigid transform, only rotation and translation, you can do it exactly this way and it will work. Yeah. So if you look for a 2D rotation and translation, you just rotate your indices and translate your indices, and then you search over the sum of square differences. I mean, this is not a very effective type of approach, but it works. Yeah. It will work, and you can register intensity-based, you can register images intensity-based without using point features. That's cool. That's cool. Now you might say, it's cool, but on the other side, it's not cool because if we would be in California, yeah, you cannot think about this weather here. But in California, it could happen that at some point, you know, a little cloud is moving in front of the sun. Yeah, so the illumination conditions between the two images change. Yeah, so the intensities should be the same, but they are scaled a little bit, and our similarity measure should be invariant to scaling. Or if you think in terms of X-rays, the dose is maybe changing between two acquisitions, and so one image is a little brighter and the other one is a little darker. And so we have to make sure that intensity scalings are not affecting the similarity measure. The SSD is sensitive to scaling of intensities. And that's also why SSD-based registration is not working for MR images where you have different bias fields. That's a standard question at conferences. If a young PhD student shows up at the podium presenting his research doing image registration as part of the methods with MR images, the smart question you can always ask, how do you deal with bias fields? Yeah, because we all know that you have to do a bias field correction, otherwise it's not working. And if the guy who is up there hasn't worked on bias correction, he might have not considered it, and then you can say, well, then your system will not work properly.
About the intensity.
Yeah.
If there's just the difference in intensities, can't I just take the averages of both images, then take a difference of them, and then compute just, and then take a difference from the intensities of one image, the intensities minus the
mean,
minus the difference of means.
Yeah, I mean, you can do a mean normalization, and that means that's also why I have introduced the F bar and G bar. So you normalize the intensities with respect to the mean, and then you also have to do a scaling normalization, and that's exactly what the Pearson cross-correlation coefficient does. And that's the second similarity measure we want to consider that takes exactly the idea Roman has mentioned, that you do a mean normalization and an intensity scaling to get the required invariance. So what we see here is the sum of squared differences. You have F and you have G, and then you have your transformation. Yeah? And it doesn't matter whether you move around the XY positions or whether you modify your intensity values. That's a way of looking at things. And the correlation coefficient takes care of the different scalings. Yeah? Think about the cloud and the sunshine. So you normalize your intensity values with respect to the mean value, and here you have a normalization coefficient that does the proper scaling of the intensity values. And this one can be used for registering images that show the same structure but differ in the intensity level or in the intensity scaling. Yeah. These are the two mostly used similarity measures for mono-model image registration. Mono-model means you have images of one and the same modality. Yes, there was a question.
Is the mean normalization the perfect normalization, or is it physically logical to use it?
It's statistically logic. So the Pearson correlation coefficient is known from statistics. If you have random measures that differ in scaling, then you get this type of normalization in there. But if you talk about optimality, the question is in which sense optimal? Yeah. I mean, if you talk about the result of your exam and you say, I have a grade of 2 and that's the optimal result, that might not be the optimal result in terms of grades you can achieve, but in terms of the efforts you had to prepare and what you get out of that. Yeah. So it always depends on your measurement. No. Yeah, in this case, yes, affine. So you have a multiplication and an offset. That's the assumption here. Yeah, that's right. Haven't you seen that in statistics lectures? You should have. What are you studying, sir?
Physics.
Yeah, sometimes you do the wrong decisions in your life. I know that. But it's good that you are here now, so we can, you know, move your education into the right direction. Yeah. In terms of optimality, I mean, you can also say if you are unemployed and you get Hartz IV, yeah, you get 400 or 500 euros. How much is it? I don't know. You get a certain amount of money without being required to work. That can be also an optimum state. Yeah. And I always try to work less and to get more money, but nowadays it's different. I work even more and so. You had another comment, sir? No? Max?
I have a question on the sum of squared distances on the transformation T.
Yeah.
Because it should be a translation and a rotation.
No, in general it can be anything at the end
or
of the
anything.
Day. Yeah.
Out of T, because I can have a translational, rotational, distortion.
Right. I mean, that's something that we have to specify at the end of the day. If we say it's a rigid transformation, then we squeeze in there our rotation matrix and our translation. If we say it's a displacement field, like we had it in our distortion modeling, like a polynomial, yeah, fifth order or fifth degree polynomial, then we have to put this properly into the representation here and set up the optimization problem adequately. Here it's a very generic setup. Tobias? Who else? No question? That's good. So, okay. When we started to work on image registration, at the beginning when I went into research, I was not eager to work on image registration. This was not in my focus, but while talking to doctors, they always came up with problem settings where registration is a crucial component. So we started to work on image registration 12 years ago here in our lab and tried to solve practical problems. And then the following happened. I had one student, and he worked on the problem a radiologist came up with. He was saying the following: I have a CT data set of a tumor patient. Okay, the tumor patient has a tumor in his brain. I do an image, I do a 3D reconstruction of the tumor patient, and then I start treatment, for instance, chemotherapy or something like that, or radiation therapy. And after a certain amount of time, the patient comes back and I do another CT of the tumor patient. And the doctor was asking the question, how much has the tumor changed in terms of volume? How much did the tumor shrink in terms of millimeters to the power of 3? We want to measure that. And as a young professor, I was saying, no problem at all. We're going to solve that for you. And we went back and we did a cool implementation. And we did the registration and it totally messed up. Yeah, I mean, we did a registration of the two data set and then we computed the difference. And then my intuition was, I compute the difference, and then I see how much the tumor has changed. I mean, in the ideal case, that's true. But what happened is the following. It can give you a nice intuition, and that it is clear to you what happened. Let's talk about a simpler situation that you can easily imagine. So think about the following: we have May, okay, May, and Bergkirchweih is approaching, okay. And before you go to the Bergkirchweih for documentation purposes, you get an X-ray to make sure that after you come back, you can compare what happened to you, okay. Okay, so you got an X-ray. That's the shape of your head, okay? And then you go to the Bergkirchweih and you go to the Bierzelt and you have beer. And at some point, someone was very irritated by your comments and he takes his beer mug and throws it on your head, okay? So you go back home and you get the post-Bergkirchweih X-ray. Okay, and then you have a shape like this. Okay, yeah, you have a shape like this. And then, of course, yeah, you want to tell your dad what is the volume of the change of your skull, because there is more space for brain now, right? So what you want to do is you want to overlay these two structures, and then I don't have color. So we have the second structure here. And when you compute the difference, you basically get here the volume. That's the idea. But what happens, you want to be in average for all the pixels. You want to be as small as possible. And what happens is that the first structure is put like this here on the butt. So you have a little bias. And that means that the bone structures are not perfectly matched because they move a little bit towards the changes, because then overall, in average, things are, the similarity measure is smaller. Yeah? Or to explain this more in terms of mathematics, you can consider image registration as a regression problem. You have to estimate parameters. So think about the situation. You want to estimate a straight line through these points. Yeah? So what you do is you do a least square fit like this one here. And you have a least square fit here. Your line will sit there. Yeah? That's exactly what happened here in our registration situation. So we registered two data sets that differ in the tumor, but also the rigid structures are mismatched. And if you have to solve this problem of regression here, the computer scientists and physicists should carefully listen. The computer scientists' engineer solution is we detect these outliers, leave them out, and just compute the fit for the remaining points. And in terms of our registration problem of the tumor patient, what we did is we did a segmentation of the bones, because we know the bones do not change if you have a brain tumor. We registered just the bones and used the transformation and applied it to the whole data set at the end of the day. And at the end, we have perfectly matched bones, and we have a very nice difference image of the tumor. That was the idea. Yes, sir?
So one question I have at the beginning. Why don't we apply this idea and just find edges or something like that? Because the computer vision guys already find edges or some SIF points or something like that, and then they register. Why don't we do this here?
You can. I mean, why didn't we do that 12 years ago? Because we didn't know about SIF features. They were still on their way to be invented. Why didn't you invent it? I don't know. You know, the easy ideas are out there and we don't see them. And we try to do it based on intensities. I mean, of course, you can compute features, but we really want to do it just data-driven. And another psychological aspect that went into it, the segmentation of the bones is not done automatically, but by the visualization tool by the doctor. So he can move a slider, and then he sees the bone structures being carved out of the data set. And at some point, if he says, I'm happy with the bone segmentation, he presses a button, and this modified volume data set is used for registration. And that is in terms of accepting the result by doctors and radiologists, this is an approach that is more appreciated, I would say. There was another question? Yes? Of course, you can think of many different variants, but the point is you really have to find a way that you register data sets where you don't have this bias effect. Yeah. So if you use gradients, you will also get the gradient of the tumor. And the question is, how much will that bias the solution? And the easiest is to find some structures that are not affected by the tumor, and you do the registration based on that. Yeah. And that's what we implemented. So what you see here is pre and post. You see the tumor here. That's the tumor here in this area. It's not a brain tumor. It's in here. And if you register, you get here this stake type of structure. Where does this come from? Where does the state come from in the difference image? If you register the two data sets and compute the difference, we get here this stake. This comes from the fact that the volumes, the two volumes, cover different ranges. So this part that you see here is present in one image, but it's missing in the other one. So it remains there after you compute the difference. So this is something that you can see here, but not here. So this remains in there. Here you see a little bit the spine. The spine is clear because the spine is flexible, so it might have moved a little bit. You see here a little bone structure, and you see here the difference in the tumor. And what we now do in image registration quite often is we do a checkerboard representation. So we take the two images that are registered on each other, and we don't show them in parallel, but we take a square of image number one, a square of image number two, a square of image number one, a square of image number two, and we get this checkerboard representation. And if they are perfectly matched, we should not see the checkerboard structure because they should have no offsets between the little squares. And this is what we get if we do the registration brute force with this approach. Here you see one square of image number one, one square of image number one, one square of image number two, and you see the offset in the bones, right? You see the bones are not perfectly matched. And if we do the idea I have described on the previous in the previous situation here, we take the data set and we compute by using the visualization tool. We apply a certain transfer function while rendering the 3D data set. We use the bone structure and we click and use just these pixels or voxels that belong to the bones for registration. We get this type of checkerboard representation. And you see here, yeah, you don't see any cracks in the bones, so they are perfectly matched. But here, and I should switch off the, at least this light here. It's saying off, but it's not switching off. Okay. But you see, a little differences. You see differences here, and you also see differences here. The reason for differences here is due to the fact that the person got a flu in the meantime and was a little bit thicker here in the nose area. And here at the tumor, we have the differences. And if you look at the overall difference image using the different, where do I have it? I don't have it here. Then you see that the tumor can be visualized easily. Here is another example. You see a thorax. Where is the tumor? The tumor is sitting here. You see the tumor here, close to the ribs. Of course, you will have artifacts due to the heart because the heart is moving, and the question is which heart state is captured. We do the registration with a checkerboard. Here you even have breathing problems. This is the registration based on using the bone structure. And here you see the difference image. And here you see, of course, the lungs have changed because people are breathing. And here you see the difference in the tumor, in the difference image that can be measured by them. Yeah? That was a nice project for a bachelor thesis type of project, and was very funny to see what happened. We have published this in one of our major conferences, and my student that time got a ticket to San Diego for presenting his results. It was also very nice. Good. Dieter Hahn did it. In the meantime, he has his own company and his doctor and so on. Very, very, very good. Good. So now we can do registration using images of one and the same modality. And we also have seen a trick how to deal with bias problems, how to combine it with segmentation. And I can tell you there is no golden standard to solve a registration problem. It always depends on the problem you have to solve in particular. So you have to do special optimizations for the situation you have to tackle. There are some commercial products out where you can buy registration software, also open source libraries for medical image processing provide very powerful registration routines, but it always depends on the very specific situation you have to deal with, whether you can use what's already existing or whether you have to develop your own specific image registration method. Okay, good. Let me wipe the board and motivate the next class of problems. The next invention happened in 1995, and it was done by a good friend of mine. This was a revolution in image registration. He wrote the most reference paper in our field based on the idea I'm sketching in a few seconds, and it's very, very interesting. He's now a professor at Harvard, by the way. That's the difference. Ladies and gentlemen, he's also going to visit us in May. I have a phone call today with him, so we are very, very much linked to him and working very much together. Very, very exciting. So, what is the problem? So we have point correspondences, we have intensity-based registration using one and the same modality, and the next step is think about the following situation. I capture an image of you using an MR system and using a CT system and a PET system, and I want to bring them all together. And then you can say SSD might be a good idea, but SSD is not working because different modalities represent one and the same point in space by different intensities. And we also know that different modalities show or have their own advantages and show different parts or different situations in the human body differently. Yeah. So what you see with a PET, you usually cannot see exactly this way in MR or a CT image. And you want to combine them using an intensity-based approach. Yeah, many people think, yeah, let's use the gradient and blah, 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 and still people are doing that now. But what Sandy Wells did that time, he was very much in statistical image processing. He came up with a very nice statistical concept. So we look at the key question, another key question. How can you perform intensity-based image registration using images acquired by different modalities? So the situation is like this. you have, let's say, a CT image, and then you have an positron emission tomography image. That looks like this. You see here some structures, increased metabolism, but the anatomic information is very much reduced. Yeah? And the question is, how can I compute the transformation from F to G? And now let's talk about the similarity measure between these two. So let's assume we know the transformation and they are perfectly matched, and we look for a similarity measure that tells us these two images are the same. Okay? And what Sandy and his partners did at that time, they came up with a very nice similarity measure that we know from telecommunication. He was just saying, why don't I assume that I have a CT image? So think about your smartphone. Yeah, you send your CT data set through the smartphone and transfer it through the Atlantic to your friend over in the US. Yeah? And while it was going through the channel, some information gets lost through the channel. Some information gets lost. And some noise, for instance, through the cable gets in, and your partner receives a PET image. Okay? So now with the digital world, it's a little different, but if you think in terms of telecommunication, you say something into the channel, and it's transferred, and some information gets lost, and some noise gets in, and at the other end of the cable, a signal is received. Yeah, and if they are perfectly matched, they should show the same situation, and that means the information that sits in the CT and the PET data set that is actually linking these two, that is this part, and this is called mutual information. And for the Germans in the audience, in German it's called Transinformation. Transinformation. And if I now allow rotation and translation or any transformation, you can imagine if you move around this, the mutual information will go up and down, and it will be the largest for the proper transformation. Yeah? They will have the same content if the information here in terms of the degrees of freedom given by the transformation affects the mutual information. It should be as maximum as possible. Now the question is, what is mutual information? I'm sure many of you have heard about that, but you want to remember this in 10 years from now, right? Even physicists should remember this 10 years from now. Okay. Now let's go back to statistics and probability theory. We have seen the KL divergence between two PDFs. How is it defined, Lea? Now you can tell me, that's already 3 months ago. How can you expect that I remember it? And I can tell you, it's already 35 years ago in my situation. Nah, 55 years. Pardon me?
There is a logarithm in it.
There is a logarithm in it.
There are two integrals.
There are, if it's a...
And I think we have a
Excellent. That's the mutual information. Yeah? If P and Q are the same, the argument of the logarithm is 1, so it's 0. So, yeah? Otherwise, it's larger than 0. So if they are the same, P and Q, the KL goes down to 0. In which context did we introduce KL divergence this semester, at least?
Entropy,
yeah, was one thing. In terms of, we discussed it in the context of bias correction for MR. So, now let's do again the following experiment. So we have our CT. That's how telephones looked like 500 years ago. Yeah. So it goes into a cable, it gets transferred to the US, and here we have this, and we put in here the CT and we receive here the PET. Okay? Okay, that's the idea. That's the channel. Okay, that means that we put in here an intensity value fxy and receive here an intensity value gxy. Okay? Okay? If the information that I received is linked to the information that I sent, I would say that these two random variables are statistically dependent, right? That's what I would assume. Yeah. If they are somehow linked, I would say the input and the output are linked, and linked in the language of probability theory means they are statistically dependent, okay? They are statistically dependent. So F and G are statistically and what Sandy Wells was saying that that time, he was saying if I have the right transformation, what I send and what I receive, or the pixels in the PET image that are matched to the pixels in the CT image, they should be statistically dependent as much as possible. Okay? What does it mean if two random variables, F and G, are statistically dependent? If they are statistically dependent, we know that you cannot do a factorization like that. They are statistically dependent. You cannot do a factorization like that. Because if you do this type of factorization, they are statistically independent. And now the intuition is compute a transformation such that you end up with F and G and pairwise assignments of the pixels, that you have pairs of pixels that show the highest degree of statistical dependency. And how can you measure statistical dependency? Well, what you can do is you can compute over all the intensities here. And if they are statistically dependent, this should be 0. And if they are independent, it should be large. And if they are very independent from each other, these two are very much different. So the maximization of the mutual information will end up with a probability density function that guarantees that the arguments are as much as possible statistically dependent. Yeah, that's the idea of mutual information. That's exactly the definition of mutual information. So if you transform this into the language of telecommunication, you will exactly end up with a KL divergence for the situation that you have the joint density and the product density as the two components in the KL divergence. And now we have to think how to formalize this to an overall approach for image registration. But that was a revolutionary idea. Yeah? Sounds very straightforward, but that's a revolutionary idea. And all the commercial systems nowadays, all that use software-based multi-model image registration algorithms, use this type of similarity measure for image registration. So once again, what type of image should you keep in mind? Here you have your intensities, let's say of the CT data set. And here you have your PET data set. And you try to align those pixels here. And let's say here, you want to align the pixels such that these pairs you get, these pairs here, they should be statistically dependent, yeah? I have the two, and I try to match the two images such that the assigned pixels, for the assigned pixels, you get then pairs of intensities. Let's say 5 in the CT, 15 in the PET, 7 in the CT, 28 in the PET. You get pairs. And then you can, for two images, of course, you can count, you can compute the histogram. You can say which pairs show up with which probability. And then you can take the single images, and then you can compute the relative frequencies of the two images, of the intensities in the two images. And then you can look whether the joint PDF and the product of the two single PDFs are similar to each other or not. If they are similar to each other, that means that you have not a perfect match, because basically the PET and the CT intensity value, they are not linked to each other. And if they are perfectly matched, the statistical dependency should be high. And that means the joint density should be very much different from the product of the single densities. Yeah? And that's exactly what we do in non-rigid image registration. We look for a transformation such that the dependency of the aligned intensities in the two images for each pixel, that the dependency is maximized. And that's a tremendously difficult optimization problem, but it's a very powerful similarity measure. And on Thursday, we will have another 90 minutes to look into the details of that. So let me just go back here 1 second. Is it coming back now? The beamer is switched off. So let's continue on Friday, and I'll explain you a few tricks how you can implement this. Thank you very much, and see you on Thursday.